accession number 13724, reel 1.
Group Captain Lowell, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in London in March 1915.
Whereabouts in London?
In Bedford Park.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was went to the Boer War when he was 18. He left his school at Clifton and went to the Boer War and commissioned on the field, and he was rather unique that in 1912 he got his pilot's license, the Royal Aeronautical Pilot's License, and then he went into the IFC, the Royal Flying Corps, and was shot down in 1916. He was very badly damaged. He lost a leg. In actual fact, he collided over his airfield in France. And he was in hospital for about a year. And then he was back on flying and was, at the end of the war, was a regular IAF officer and retired in 1931 from the Royal Air Force.
Did you go to school in Bedford Park?
No, I went to school at Collett Court and Durston House and then on to Eastbourne College.
So presumably you wanted to go into the RAF from
the start? I always wanted to go into the RAF. I had a brother who was 5 years older than me who went to Sandhurst. I tried for the civil service examination to go to Cranwell. I passed high enough for Sandhurst, but I never had any interest of going into the army. And so I then learnt to fly at number 5 flying school at Sealand in Cheshire.
Did you have any difficulty in learning how to fly?
No, I was very fortunate. I had a first-class instructor by name of Flying Officer Kenneth Cross, who ended up the war as an Air Chief Marshal, a very distinguished officer, who was a very sympathetic instructor who taught me to fly. And I learned to fly on Tudor's Bristol Bulldogs, and Heinz and Fighter Fiores.
What were you doing when war broke out?
When the war broke out, I was a flight commander in number 49 squadron at Scampton.
What was your reaction to the news that we were at war with Germany?
My reaction to the news that we were at war with Germany was that I was called into my CO's office and told that on September the 3rd, 39, that I had the honor of leading the 3 aircraft, the 3 Hanley Page Hampden aircraft, together with number 83 squadron, to bomb the Deutschland in Wilhelmshaven Bay, and with 2 other pilots, namely Flying Officer Learoyd, L-E-A-R-O-Y-D, Learoyd, who gained a very well-earned VC on the Dortmund-Elms Canal some 6 months later. We took off in formation to fly to Wilhelmshaven, but What is interesting, at that stage we had never taken off with a full bomb load, and literally none of us had ever flown in a full blackout. So we took off from Scampton, and followed by number 83 squadron, and flew towards Wilhelmshaven. And when we got within about 40 miles of it, the weather was so appalling, it was raining and low cloud, we couldn't see anything. So I decided that there was no point in carrying on, and we returned to base with our bomb load. What is interesting, the third pilot, a Sergeant Pratt by name, he had never landed at night before. Leroy'd night flying was very limited, and I had approximately 30 hours night flying, so I was the most experienced. And we were fortunate enough to get back to Scampton and landed with our full bomb loads intact.
This was actually on the 3rd of September?
The 3rd of September, 39, yes.
Why do you think things were so relatively poorly prepared for that raid?
Well, first of all, they weren't sure which type of bombs we should take, and eventually they gave us 500-pound bombs to bomb this Deutschland battleship. Fortunately, had we actually attacked the ship, I don't think they would have done very much damage. But nevertheless, we never got there. So one can't tell if any damage would have been done. But all the aircraft from number 83 squadron, led by Wing Commander Willie Snaith, an ex-Snyder Trophy pilot, they all aborted, and in actual fact, all of us returned with no casualties to Scampton.
What height would you have attacked from?
We were told to attack from 500 feet, which in looking back on it now would have been absolutely suicidal, as the Blenheims, I understand, went in the next day at that height, and they were massacred. It was interesting that the awful panic on the little panic on the station, that all the wives of the airmen were sort of assembled by the side of the airfield to see us take off, and of course many of the squadron pilots watched the takeoff, and it was an interesting situation, because we were very thrilled to, literally at that stage of the game, to be asked to lead this first raid. But as I say, it really was an abortive attempt. An interesting thing happened, though. About 3 weeks later, I, as a flight commander, was sitting in my office, and the telephone went. And it was the headquarters saying that there were two gentlemen who wanted to interview me from the, either, I can't remember whether it was the Home Office or the Foreign Office, but they wanted to interview me about my car. And I thought this was somewhat odd. However, these gentlemen were shown into my office. And one said to me, "Do you own a Hillman Minx car?" And I remember the number of it distinctly, which was DT9510. And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Well, have you ever visited the Vicar of Scampton in your car?" And I said, "No." I said, "Are you talking to me because the car wasn't taxed? Because I've been away quite a bit and, you know, I will get it taxed next week. I'm sorry about the tax. They said, we're not interested in the tax. But on a date a week previously, your car was seen at the vicar's house, and a tall IAF officer got out of the car, and I said, well, can you tell me the date? And so they mentioned the date, and I fortunately looked up in my logbook, and I found at that date I was away at another IAF unit at Newton. And they said, well, this conversation is absolutely confidential, strictly confidential. You're not to discuss it with anybody. And I was a bit shaken, and away they went. I didn't think anything more to it. And our intelligence officer was a squadron leader called Thompson, and he was a reserve officer who'd been called in when war had been declared, and he did all the briefings for us. And a week later, the police went down to the vicar's house, the vicar's name being the Reverend Nye, N-Y-E, and they found the squadron leader and the vicar upstairs transmitting to Germany, whether it was Morse code or VHF, I don't know, but the vicar was placed under arrest and was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment, and the squadron leader disappeared and was later court-martialed. Now, what happened to him, I don't know. But what is interesting, that nine Hanley Page Hamden aircraft, which we were flying then from another squadron at IAF Hemsville, took off and to fly to Heligoland. And when they got there, they were met by approximately 30 ME-109s, and were a lot. Many of them were shot down. In fact, I think 60% of them were shot down. And it's always a debatable point whether this vicar, this is the theory in the squadron at the time, he might have been transmitting the takeoff. However, that was a very interesting thing that happened in 1939.
So that was in September as well, was it?
That was in September, October 39.
What was it like flying the Hamden?
The Hamden was an extraordinary aircraft. There was one pilot and a second pilot who worked as navigator. He couldn't get to the controls. A wireless operator and an air gunner. And things were fairly silent as far as operations were concerned until I was transferred to number 144 squadron at Hemsville in July of 1940.
You mean you didn't have any operations?
No, because I was transferred in the meantime to IAF Station Finningley as an instructor on Hamdens and on bombing technique. Not that I knew much about bombing technique. Nevertheless, I was there for 3 months until I was promoted to squadron leader and posted to number 144 squadron. With the squadron, I carried out 30 bombing raids on Germany, including Berlin, Leipzig, Dusseldorf, all the main cities of Germany. Now, flying at night, it was quite impossible to actually pick out a target. You had to estimate your wind and the flying conditions. You had no, literally, very limited Met forecasts, and you just had to bomb as near the target as you possibly could get to, but it was quite impossible to actually, in my opinion, to handpick an oil works, say, for example, at the Leuna works that we went to in Leipzig. You couldn't find them in the blackout at night, or at least you could get approximately close to them, but you could never guarantee that you were going to hit the target.
So you were making deep penetration into Germany?
We were making deep penetration into Germany. From June until the following February of 41. Now,
in Hamdens?
In Hamdens, yes. Now, some of the particular raids that took place, one of the most frightening ones was we were told to go and bomb Hanover. And we were informed by the intelligence that the barrage balloons never went above 8,000 feet. And so with my crew, we flew to Hanover, and it was a very bright night, and there wasn't much flak until we got within about 20 miles of Hanover, and we were then coned by about 20 searchlights, and we were flying at approximately 9,000 feet when my navigator, who was sitting in the front of the aircraft, screamed out. He could see balloons above us and around us. And the flak was very, very intense. We were hit by the flak. And suddenly the aircraft appeared to come to a halt. It had an airspeed of about 140 miles an hour, but we were losing height. We were just floating down. And in actual fact, what had happened was we had hit one of the cables of the balloons, and we were going down the cable. And by the grace of God, we had balloon cutters on the wings of the Hamden, and the cutter snapped the balloon, and we dived down then to about 2,000 feet. Very frightened crew, I can assure you, and flew back to England at that height. And when we got back, we had the cable had gone through. Had he gone through another half foot, it would have taken the wing away. There's no question about that. But fortunately, the cable saved us, or the balloon cutters, or rather the balloon cutters saved us by cutting through the cable.
But you had been hit by flak.
We'd been hit slightly by flak. The aircraft had been damaged, but not fatally.
I think you found the date in your logbook of that raid.
October the 21st, 1940.
Are there any other details that the logbook gives about the raid?
It says here, bombing Hanover oil plant. The bombs carried were 1,000-pounders and 2 250-pound bombs.
Did any of the other Hamdens come to grief in that raid, do you remember?
I can't remember. I'm sure several did, because on every raid we lost two or three.
On every raid?
Oh, yes. You see, as far as I recall, when in September 39, I think we had approximately, I might not be 100% accurate here, but I'm fairly near, we had in the number 5 group, which was our group, we had approximately 125 pilots who were all fairly experienced at that stage, and we were told we had to carry out 30 bombing missions before we could be relieved to other appointments. And at the end of that tour, of those 100-odd pilots, I think there must have been about 25 left. Admitted, one or two extra were prisoners of war who had bailed out over Germany, but the chop rate was pretty high.
So how did that affect morale?
It didn't affect it at all. The morale was always 100%. There was never any LMF or... The thing that absolutely amazed me was I was a relatively experienced pilot then with over 1,200 hours flying, and we were getting youngsters in the squadron with approximately 200 hours flying, not that. And how they coped with the weather conditions, the blind flying, is quite beyond me, because I found it very, very difficult, and I could instrument fly.
How can you explain the high morale in view of such poor prospects?
Because these chaps, they were so brave and had so much guts that they never squealed or said they didn't want to do it. They were just only too pleased to go on any trip. It sounds absolutely extraordinary, but it's quite true. With the chopper, of course people were depressed, people were, you literally didn't speak. They went, you said, well, he's gone for a Burton, or he's got the chop, and somebody took his place the next day, and that's how it went.
Did you have the responsibility as squadron leader of informing the next of kin?
The adjutant. We used to write letters, of course, but the adjutant also and the CO of the squadron normally always wrote to the next of kin.
Now, you were about to tell me about another raid.
Well, the other one that was terribly frightening was a raid to Hamburg one night, and we went there and we ran into the most terrible weather conditions coming back, and slowly all the instruments froze over. The temperature was, I think, minus 40 degrees, and all the instruments frosted over like a refrigerator, and so you couldn't see in an instruments. And the engine started cutting, and I was at 9,000 feet, and you could see the ice and snow building up on the wings, and one had no way of instrument flying, because you couldn't see any instruments. And we had then a booster which... sprayed into the engines if they iced up to try and assist them, and we pressed this, and I thought, well, it's no good, you can't climb through this, I mean, we're too heavy, and I thought, well, I'll try and centralize the controls as much as I can, because, I mean, it was just like being in a fridge with ice all around. You couldn't see out, all the windows were iced up, everything was iced up, and I thought we were flying straight and level, and at about 3,000 feet we broke cloud, and we were doing literally a vertical dive, and fortunately it was raining then, the hail and snow had gone, and we pulled out at about 200 feet above the sea, and the engines, thank God, they kept turning. And we got back, but it was a very frightening experience. Had the cloud base been 1,000 feet lower, we'd have just gone straight in, and we'd have never known what had happened. one of those things. But this happened, I am sure. A lot of the pilots weren't shot down. They were killed by the weather conditions. And young pilots joining the squadron, they just hadn't got the experience and the luck to get away with it. That frightening experience of the weather conditions happened on October the 11th, 1940.
Any other details in your logbook about the raid?
No, nothing about it. We just dropped our bombs on Hamburg, and no comments. We just got back.
Was it on a specific target in Hamburg?
No, it was, well, it was on the dockyards there. We always went for the dockyards.
What can you say about how accurate you felt the bombing was at the time?
Well, over a town like Hamburg, it was relatively easy because, you see, you had the sea to guide you in, and you could, if the weather was good, which it was at the start of that night from the point of view of flying conditions, you had no difficulty in picking out Hamburg with the river there. And the big town, you could see that. The bombs, no doubt, dropped either in the docks or in the town, but one cannot say with accuracy where they actually fell.
But what about an inland town like Hanover?
In an inland town like Hanover, you were lucky if the weather conditions were good and your navigation was correct, you found the actual town or city. But you weren't fussed as long as your bombs dropped on Hanover. You couldn't, you weren't too concerned.
Were there cameras to...
No, in those days, well, no, cameras came in later on in 41.
During this period of 40-41, did the enemy fighters come up against you?
I saw one enemy fighter. There weren't any large amount of enemy fighters. I saw one night, which I think was an ME-110, and he circled me and I turned into him. It was a moonlight night and we saw each other quite distinctly. And I fired at him, and he fired at me, but then he pushed off. I didn't see him again.
Why do you think he pushed off?
I don't know.
What were your main problems as squadron leader of 144 at the time?
Well, the main squadrons were... The main points where I had to select the crews in my flight to go, and it was, I used to try and put the junior young pilots, age 18, 19, 20, that's for the average age of those young pilots, on what we termed nursery sloper targets. That were easy targets, places like, for example, like Hamburg, which were easy to find, but we didn't, if it was at all possible, send them to the hard targets like Berlin or Hanover or Leipzig.
Who did you put on those?
The more experienced pilots, but gradually they were going. That was our trouble, you see. All the experienced pilots were being killed off.
Were there any discipline problems in the squadron?
None whatsoever, no. Just extremely high morale.
How did the aircrew let off steam?
Oh, they let off steam by... you normally flew about once every 4 nights. And